All right, I'm going to go ahead and call our final pre-council of 2025 to order. December 15th, 2025. We have one item on the agenda and an opportunity for if there are other items that council wants to discuss. So our one and only agenda is from our Board of Health, the Public Health and Human Services Department, updates to Chapter 5, Animals and Fowl. So Rebecca Roslin, I'm going to kick this over to you.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Tom Rose, who is a member of the Board of Health, will be here shortly to walk through the presentation. Just a reminder to council, the Board of Health came to council at the end of last year asking for council's direction to review Chapter 5, Animals and Fowl. That request was initially came about because we had an individual come to council who had more than four cats, which are currently allowed in Chapter 5. And there is not a provision in Chapter 5 allowing the health department director to grant any type of variance as there are in other sections. I can give a variance for livestock in the city limits, but not for five cats. So, and then upon looking further into Chapter 5, there were some other things that staff recommended the Board of Health look at and consider updating. So the process, we started this in January. We looked through the ordinance. Our animal control supervisor, who's behind me, Kevin Myers, he really marked through the items that have been issues over the years and as from his perspective. And we identified that there were going to be four topics that we felt the community was going to be most invested in giving input on. And so we intentionally separated those out into four separate meetings. So it would be noted on the agenda that this was the topic we were going to be covering. We promoted that on Be Heard as well as our social media so that individuals that were very passionate about that particular topic would be aware that that was the time that they could come and speak. Although, of course, they could come and speak at any time on any topic. So just for your awareness, those four things were changes to the feral cat ordinance, the vicious and nuisance dog hearings, which we'll talk about that more, and some changes to tethering requirements in the city. And then the fourth one was, of course, the number of dogs and cats that could be allowed in any one household. So tonight's presentation, we've got the PowerPoint, which is a high-level overview, and then we shared with everybody the edited or the marked up Chapter 5. This has been reviewed by legal as well. So we can talk about any questions you might have in the full edited. We're going to hit the main highlights with the PowerPoint, and then each slide has the page number for this document that corresponds to those recommended edits. Any questions on that before we get started or on the process or anything?
No, I appreciate the detailed process and community engagement. Thanks for joining us, Rebecca.
Yeah. Okay, so as we walk through this, there are some definitions that we just changed throughout the document. They're very minimal in impact. For example, Columbia Police Department's dogs are mentioned multiple times. We just changed that to law enforcement in case it's a highway patrol dog or MUPD had a dog. We also changed citizen to person every place that you see that, just so there's no question about that use of language. Other minor changes you'll see throughout. So the first one, so on page one of your definitions, is this close enough to my mouth?
Yep.
Okay, am I screaming?
No.
Okay, sometimes people use the microphone, you still can't even hear them.
So okay. If you sit back, it will be too far.
It will be too far, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so page one on the definitions, under dangerous or aggressive animal advisory. So this is something we're going to talk about a little further down the road. The county has a process for a dangerous and aggressive animal advisory board and where you can request a hearing. So anytime we can align city processes with county's processes, we really try to do so because as a city-county department, that can be a little tricky for us and for residents who are like, I don't understand, this was fine 2 years ago when I lived in the county and now it's not fine. So farther, later on, we're going to talk about the possible addition of a hearing process, where if your animal is deemed to be vicious in the city of Columbia and you disagree with that, you can request a hearing. The county has an existing process. So that's why we needed to add this definition on page one. Okay, and then we updated the definition of feral cat colonies on page two. And the definition of feral cat colony would now be any number of five or more feral cats being cared for at a single location. Health official, we added a health official definition that allows it to be myself or any other person appointed by the director of the health department so that another staff member could fill in my absence. Okay, page three. So this is section 5.3, disposition of animals biting or attacking persons. So there are occasions when it is in the best interest of everyone for an impounded animal to be impounded at the residence versus the Humane Society or the vet. So whenever there is an animal bite, and Kevin, step in if I get this wrong. Yeah, would you mind? We'll pull up a chair for Dr. Rose when he shows up. Again, Kevin Myers is our animal control supervisor.
Hi there.
Hi, you.
We've got one there. So whenever there's an animal bite, for example, and the animal is not current on its rabies vaccination, it has to be impounded for a period of 10 days. And the reason for that is at the end of 10 days, animal control will lay eyes on the animal and see if it is alive, in which case we're probably fine. Or if it's deceased, then we really are going to be quite worried about rabies. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah.
So on occasion, it's really difficult for the animal to be placed outside of its residence for those 10 days. It could be that the Humane Society runs are full. It could be that the animal is very old or has other behavioral issues that would make it either unkind or unsafe to force the animal to be impounded at the Humane Society. Sometimes people try to impound at their vet's office, but not all veterinarians' offices will allow for that. We'll finish this slide up, Dr. Rose, and then we'll have you hop in.
Sorry for being late.
That's okay. You had animals to take care of.
I just have to say, hey, you got another appointment. I say, what?
Okay. So then the other thing that we really wanted to add in here was information about obtaining a city license. So, Kevin, do you want to speak about that part?
Yeah, the ordinances currently say that you have to have a license for your dog at the time of the bite. Otherwise, it has to be impounded for that quarantine period with us or a vet. So what Rebecca didn't mention is that there are fees associated with impounding a dog with us for 10 days. It's $20 a day boarding fee. So people are racking up $200 fees and they're not wanting to pick up their dogs at the end of that quarantine because it's a large amount of money. So that's one more reason we'd like for them to be able to quarantine at home. But getting that license, a lot of people unfortunately don't know that there's a licensing law until they interact with us. So most people do not have a license at the time their dog was to bite someone. And that may just be somebody that came over to visit the family for whatever reason. So being able to obtain one, as long as they have a current rabies shot, they can get the license because that's required to get the license. So,
yeah, our goal is really not to have an individual have a lot of fees from boarding. It's to get rabies, that animals are fully vaccinated and that they're current on their city license. That's our end goal. Any questions about that?
I have one.
Yeah, use the microphone.
So if someone's a...
Thank you. Microphone.
Oh, sorry. If someone has their dog impounded at home, how do we know that they're keeping that dog inside?
It is a little bit of an honor system.
Okay.
Yeah. They are given those strict quarantine instructions, but we can't keep eyes on them the whole time.
If an animal were to bite after that happens, is there some sort of penalty for them?
Yeah. So if it bites during the quarantine, A, it extends that quarantine to the next 10 days from that day of that bite. But at that point, the dog has established a history of biting, and the ordinances already have written into them that if the dog has a history of biting, it has to be quarantined with a vet or with us.
Do you want us to continue, Dr. Rose? And
you may continue.
Okay.
Very well.
Okay. Section 5-6 on page 5. This is the section that speaks to changes for when an animal is tethered. So the logic to this is that there are certain things in ordinance that are required if you keep your animal contained in a fenced-in yard. You have to have adequate food, water, and shelter, and provided health care. That same language was not included if you're tethering your animal outside. And so this would be adding those same requirements if your animal is tethered for an extended period of time.
I thought we had an ordinance saying you could not tether an animal outside for more than 30 minutes at a time.
I think what we're specifically wanting to add is something that says you can't tether an animal out during inclement weather warning or advisory issued by the National Weather Service without providing the adequate provisions, which include that shelter. So it is already in the ordinance.
And we get to the weather part later.
Yeah. I think what you're talking about is this part.
Like you're also saying that they can leave them tethered outside for prolonged periods of time as long as they have shelter for them. So aren't these confusing? We need to get rid of one of them or the other?
Well, we wouldn't want to get rid of that particular one. We want to add one specifically for putting them out in severe weather, because right now they can be out in severe weather with that stuff. I don't know. I'm not really explaining it very well.
I think she's asking about particular to tethering. There are limitations. You're asking about, aren't there already limitations in to tethering? I can't specifically recall reading that section, but the section just refers to tethering the dog outside. It has to be under direct supervision. I don't know that there was a 30-minute. Okay, where was that? Yes, for prolonged 30 minutes, unless it has been provided with all those. The 30 minutes has to do with you put them out there for 30 minutes without necessarily the food or you need to just outside for that's okay, but if you're going beyond 30 minutes, that was already in there that you had to provide.
What was that other intent here?
Thanks.
Yeah, that's what so this was really what this one was.
Yeah. Okay. We're specifically adding basically what's defining what.
No. That's my mistake. I was getting lost in the verbiage. I believe 5-6B is adding a definition of animal neglect. Previously, we had a definition of animal abuse. This is adding one specifically to animal neglect. I got a little ahead of myself with the tethering because it's in the title of this section.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry for that. Okay. Here's the severe weather one on page 6. So this is adding the section about tethering outside during inclement weather warning or advisory without providing adequate shelter and care. The board had a very long conversation about this, and this again was really wanting to make sure that all things were being equal. If you have your animal tethered outside during a blizzard versus if it's outside during a blizzard and you're fenced in yard, that the animal have the same ability, same level of service, yes. On page 8, this had been in ordinance longer than any of us had worked at the health department, and I don't know that it was something that ever actually happened. And it was a section that required pet stores to collect signed health risk acknowledgement from reptile buyers. So the recommendation of the board is to delete that section from chapter 5.
Yeah, it's 5-11 specifically. Yeah, I think it might be 9 for everybody else, but 5-11 sale of reptiles.
Yeah, I'll just point out the sheets that were just handed to you are off by a page in case you haven't figured that out.
Oh,
so don't go on their page numbers unless you're looking at your iPad.
So we're going to go for sections.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, just read the sections. Yeah.
I can do that. Okay, so the next one is section 5-57, dangerous or aggressive animals. So you're going to see a lot of blue on this one. So this, and I'll let Kevin talk about what the process is that the county uses and a little bit of why we, the board feels it would be beneficial to add this to the city process.
Yeah, so currently, if a dog is declared either vicious or nuisance in the county, we would first have an investigation. We would maybe first issue a warning to the owner of the dog in the county, for whatever it may be. If we get further complaints, then we would go about just classifying the dog as vicious or nuisance. It's different in the county. And that would entail basically writing up a statement, giving it to the director of the health department, Rebecca. She would say yes or no that we should go ahead and move forward with classifying that dog as such. And then we would give paperwork to the owner, letting them know their dog has been declared either vicious or nuisance. And then they would have time to comply with that, or they would have time to request a hearing in front of the director and the vicious nuisance dog advisory board to contest that classification. And then they would get a chance to give some kind of testimony and evidence in their favor. And then anybody who has an issue with this dog's behavior would have time to give their story as well. In the city, it's basically all done through the courts. So if somebody's dog is declared dangerous and aggressive, or the cat, it could be a cat in the city, it could be any number of animals, then at that point we would issue a citation and we would have to remove their dog and then wait for it to be adjudicated in court. And most of the time the court is just hearing that charge. So they're being charged with owning a dangerous or aggressive animal and not complying with the ordinance for owning one. They don't want to hear, my dog's not dangerous or aggressive, that's why I'm not complying with the ordinance. They want to, the person with the dog wants to have basically a trial over their, whether their dog should be classified that way. So in this case, we want to change the ordinances to match that county. So we actually have that process in place before we start issuing citations.
Yeah, Nick.
I'll get a mic. This goes to a question I had right away, but I'll just go ahead and ask it here. We keep making reference to county and city. So there are two different animal control systems in place, even though, you know, animal control for the city falls under PHHS, right?
Correct.
Is there any possibility we could combine those?
So there are some really significant differences.
Okay.
So there's no...
I guess in a rural setting, there might be some different things related to animal control. So, okay.
The main difference in the county is there's what's called service areas versus non-service areas. And those service areas have been designated to have certain ordinances in place that the non-service areas don't. So a dog can technically run loose in a non-service area, whereas it can't in the service areas, which are mainly just around Columbia and outlying cities.
We're just looking to align these things.
Yeah, make them.
I mean, I think it's important to remember we are an urban area, so the count, I think ours should be more strict because we have more density of population.
So this process, I will say, I think it works really well for county residents. There have been a case, so basically at the time of the hearing, the advisory board is assembled and individuals come up and they give, the victims can give testimony if they wish. The owner of the animal can. They can provide any additional information that they wish to. The animal control officer always gives an update on what the circumstances were. I think historically there have been a handful of cases that the health department director has said, you know what, I don't think this dog meets the definition of dangerous, so we're going to change the plan here. The majority, other times they're upheld because animal control's already walked through with their own processes. Does this animal meet the definition? And I think from the court's perspective, because Kevin's had a lot of conversations with them, there really is not a system in place in the city for you to say, No, Peaches is a sweetheart. She just wasn't feeling well that day, and this is really unusual. So they would welcome this process with the city.
The one thing I'll ask on this one, and I imagine, I think we probably would have to be more clear on this one. I don't think we can use a county commissioner appointed advisory board. Not to say that we as a city can't appoint the same people
right.
to a City of Columbia one, but just thinking about what the process is for that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I feel like I would trust staff in figuring out what is that clarification. I feel like you all would know who is an adequate eligible person to deem that.
Mm-hmm.
Who is on the county?
Dr. Rose.
You
have been on for several years.
We've already put you on ours.
So,
yeah.
Right. I think we have do you guys know Andy Yappy? Dog instructor, and you know,
okay.
People that are familiar with pets and dogs.
Okay.
And animals that are on there because we usually have veterinary. I guess we have, it is a county board. I could see it being a city county appointee situation.
Something
you know, with that. There's maybe four members on.
Yeah.
One control officer, two others. So
and there's not a quorum required for that board to meet. And there is a very specific time parameters that those hearings have to be held within if the owner requests a hearing. How many days?
So,
10 days? 5 days?
To clarify, the owner has to request a hearing. They're not every animal that is feeding.
Okay.
Fish is going to have this hearing. So they have to request a hearing. And I have to tell you, many times more than not, we find that it's a human problem than an animal problem. But you have to deal with it.
Thank you.
Any other questions on that? Okay, section 5-60, limitation upon number of dogs and cats kept. So, as a reminder, the current city ordinance is 4. Is the maximum, except for puppies under the age of 6 months.
Correct.
And that is a combination of 4. So 3 dogs and 1 cat, whatever combination it is. It's not 4 cats and 4 dogs. So the board spent a lot of time really being very thoughtful about how could we possibly make this work in the city without being in a situation where individuals are collecting animals that they may not be able to provide adequate care for. One thing to keep in mind as we talk about this section in particular is that animal control is a complaint-driven model. So we only know if somebody has more than 4 if there's been a complaint from a community member or a neighbor. We're not in a, it's not a model where they drive around town and look for somebody that's out of compliance. So typically if we're aware of this, it's because someone had a complaint about sound, odor, dogs outside all hours of the night. There's been a reason why we're aware of this. The only exception to that might be oftentimes they're asked to come. There's a medical call, an ambulance has to come, or if law enforcement is involved and someone needs to contain the animals, sometimes on occasion, then they're made aware of that.
Or the off neighbor who really hates their neighbor and has to find something they don't like about the complaint.
So we've added a lot to this section. So if the board's recommendation is that if the city council were to change this to allow for a multiple pet permit, it'd have some pretty clear parameters. One is that individuals would have to apply. They have to list certain things on the application, including their information. They need to provide proof of a rabies vaccination, city license, microchip, and that the animals be sterilized. And again, we're not trying to increase the pet population here. They have to comply with any reasonable request from animal control to inspect the premises where the animals are being contained. And if they are not the owner of the property, they need written permission of the owner. So that really speaks to, we need to make sure that we won't end up in a tenant landlord situation where now somebody's being evicted because we've given them a multiple pet permit and their landlord was not in or was not in agreement with that. They also need to have the ability to provide adequate care for each animal in accordance with other sections of the chapter, of course, and that their premises are sufficient in size. We don't want to end up in a situation where animals are stacked on top. I mean, we're not okay with anything that's going to be neglectful or unkind to the animals. So we're very mindful of what's an adequate amount of space for that many dogs or cats. And then the permit is only for that person. It's not transferable. It's for those specific animals. So if you have a permit, if one dog passes away, it does not allow you to just put another dog in its place. Like, you would need to update a permit or request a new permit. And all these things would happen again. And that the permits can be revoked at any time if the situation warrants. We've also added recommended an annual permit fee of $50 for each animal over the limit of the section.
I remember the circumstances that led to this and the person who came for counsel in an appeal regarding their cats. I assume this is the kind of situation in which this would be applied. Do you have any other guidelines for that? Or is it really just sort of...
For that situation or when else it might be applied?
Yeah. I mean, is it really just kind of discretionary, or is there any further definition about circumstances under which this kind of permit would be provided?
Well, it's almost always going to be the situation Kevin and his team come upon a lot is that a situation may have gotten out of an owner's control, and now they have seven dogs, three of which belong to their son, who's unable to come and get them. So we hear this a lot with families and neighbors, and this is my dad's dog. He's in the hospital, but he's going to be out soon, and I'm just watching it. And so our goal is not to put more animals at the Humane Society and have them linger there indefinitely waiting to be adopted. So we really weigh in that circumstance, are they taking adequate care of the animal? Can they afford its medical care? But then again, something has happened that has even brought this situation to Kevin's awareness. So those animals have been barking or they're running loose. Like, there's been some type of complaint or we don't even know about them. We're not thinking that this is going to become a situation where I have my four, but now I really want to get a fifth. So I'm going to call the city first and see if I can. I think that would be highly unusual. I think most of it is going to be in response to, we've received a complaint, we're aware that you have the more than four. Is there a path forward here that might allow you to stay with your animals and vice versa?
It's still largely complaint driven, but yeah. There is a great deal of discretion, it sounds like, to me, in terms of making that decision as to whether or not
there is. There is, because if everyone, we still need to be respectful of the neighboring property owners and whomever it is that issued the complaint in the first place. So if every one of the neighbors has called with a complaint, we're not likely to issue that permit. So circumstances like that, we would have to think about very carefully. If the animals have been medically neglected in any way, we would not be issuing a permit. Can you think of other occasions? Our goal is not for people to have 10 dogs. We want four. It is a healthy number. It is a number individuals can afford. It does not create a lot of nuisance for the neighbors. We don't get a lot of calls about, we do not get calls about well-meaning animal owners who are taking good care of their animals and stay at four or less.
Yeah, I would say the big thing is, you know, so many people have like five dogs and they can take very good care of all five of those dogs with no problem. but they're in a situation now where we have to give them time to rehome their animal. And how do they pick between those one of those five dogs? So,
yeah, here.
So I know you said that right now it's very complaint driven.
Yes.
It sounds like this permit process would become a little more like when someone, when a situation occurs where suddenly you are taking in your son's two dogs, you could go through the permit process before there is a complaint. Would that be accurate, or would the permit process still happen after a complaint?
No, that would be accurate. It's just historically, you don't see a lot of folks looking through ordinance and trying to figure out all the ways they can do it right and doing it right in advance.
Because I will say one, you know, not necessarily complaint driven, but where I have seen this happen before, stories that I have heard will be someone with three cats marries someone with two dogs and they would like to live together, but are now against city ordinance. Sure. And so having an option like this where they could proactively say, we're going to do this the correct way, would prevent a complaint from coming across your desk.
It's possible. Again, though, let's say that in that scenario, then now the cats are screaming all night and the neighbors are complaining, then we're right back with, we also need to be respectful of the neighboring property owners who, I mean, when you live in the city, you don't expect to have a lot of animal issues. And so it, yeah, we could still end up back where we started, but for the most part, yes.
Well, and am I understanding this correctly, the first part of this, so B, you're expected, like, implementation of this is probably starts with a complaint. Like, to your point.
Most typically.
Most people are not proactively reading our ordinances to figure out how can I comply with
the nice? Yes.
So I'm assuming, what are you thinking that is like for you, Kevin? Like, you know, you're thinking like, okay, we get a complaint about this. I assume your first thing is like, this is the process you can file, but I'm not going to take your fifth dog right now. Or are, you know what I mean? Like, what is the implementation timeline with giving them the opportunity to do that?
Yeah, I would never go over and just take a dog right then and there for sure, unless they were like, well, here's this one. but yeah, we always give people time. Our typical is 2 weeks. I know this doesn't necessarily have a time on it,
but it's similar to your other quarantine, just the other timeline. Yeah. Okay.
And we're always willing to work with people. I mean, I don't think this would take a whole lot to work with. All they have to do is apply for it. And, you know, if there's a fee, pay that fee. And then they're good as long as they're allowing us to do the inspections and they have everything else in their compliance. So.
You know, I'll speak to this in case the question comes up later, and we really haven't discussed it. You know, there's a difference between six Great Danes and six cats. You're familiar with the case of 20 cats. This person, this may be cost prohibitive for a person for 20 cats. You know, and I've wrestled with that question. I said, well, can we make a different number for, you know, cats or small dogs? And that just becomes an unending spiral. Where do you make that decision? So if that question comes up, that's the reason why, you know, you have to set a set point.
Well, actually, I was going to ask that because I couldn't see it in here, but it's really probably that it becomes cost prohibitive, right? Do we have a maximum number?
We don't. Would you like one?
I'm thinking 20 Great Danes in an R1.
Yeah, that would definitely not be sanitary. I don't know.
So there's other things that would weigh in on its eligibility.
Right. Yeah, and I would doubt they would have the housing to be able to do that because there is that limitation of having a space for that. So,
Okay.
But somewhere in between, is there a number?
Well, and I imagine this is the sort of thing I'm expecting. I know we're not at the end of it yet, but that the Board of Health might revisit, you know, just to see what have been, how many permits have been, you know what I mean? How, what has the complaints been? I think probably be interesting to see what we are seeing after implementation.
Yeah. And again, if Kevin and his team do not, if they're in the home and they're like, this is not okay. These animals are not well cared for. He would never recommend to me that I approve that permit. Like, we rely very heavily on their expertise. They've had a lot of extra training on animal cruelty, So we really rely heavily on their input in that regard.
Can you tell us, say within the last 12 months, other than the one that appeared before council, any issues that you've run into, how many issues you've run into of too many animals, more than four?
I couldn't give you an accurate number off the top of my head. Like we said earlier, it's not very often. Most of the time, if we find out about it, it's through a different complaint totally. And then most of the time with that, unless they have an outrageous number, we're going to tell them, like, if they have five, we're probably going to say, just so you know, there's an ordinance that says you can only have four adult animals, or cats or dogs, cats and dogs. So if we get a complaint down the road, you're going to have to rehome an animal at that point. So there's some grace there. But all the examples that are coming to mind are terrible examples.
Right.
So it's very fresh in my mind on those. So that's overpowering anything else I can think of, to be honest with you. And that wasn't even in the city. So yeah, there is no limit in county, technically. So
most of the time, it's going to be a exorbitantly high number, and the animals are not being well cared for, so it would not be an issue. An occasion where Kevin might find out where it wasn't complaint-driven, I would say the best example is going to be if an ambulance needs to come and take someone and he has to show up to secure the animals, because they get those calls.
Yeah.
And, there's five cats here. There was no complaint. They're just there providing a public service alongside police or fire or the ambulance. And so they would find that out just by happenstance.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of envision, if we had this ordinance passed, if we had a complaint about somebody having too many animals, when we go to visit them about that complaint, if we can see that there's not issues there and they're complying with this, then we may take a copy of the ordinances with us to give to them and say, here's what the ordinances say. You know, it's up to you where you want to take it from there.
And a lot of times, like the situation that even brought this to light, these are folks that are new to Columbia. They had no idea that we had these rules until they ran afoul of these rules. And now it's very heartbreaking to them that they have to decide what to do with their animals. Any other questions on that? Okay, section 5-111.2, feral cats.
And Betsy, you'll know this, we're passing by the chickens, so we're not talking about them.
We can if you need to.
We're good.
But
we're good.
The board did not feel that there was a need to talk about chickens. Okay. Kevin, can you walk through some of the, because we spent a lot of time talking about feral cat colonies.
Yeah. Yeah. Mainly, it's the way it is now is very cost prohibitive to people that are wanting to maintain feral cat colonies. It's also very hard to follow because one of the main guidelines is recapturing those animals on an annual basis and having their vaccines redone. And their feline leukemia testing done. It's very difficult to capture a feral cat after you've done it the first time. They're not like dogs. They know what a trap is after they've been caught in it, and they stay clear. So one of the things we want to change is that fact that that they don't have to have that annual testing. They do have to be vaccinated against rabies at least once, which is something they always do when they first have a cat TNR, which is, we use that term as trap, neuter, return. So if somebody catches a cat, they take it to their vet, they have its ear notched, it's spayed or neutered, and they get a rabies shot, and then they release it. The science behind that is that there is a strict quarantine period in place by the American Veterinary Medical Association for any animal that has been vaccinated against rabies at least once in its lifetime. So that was kind of our thinking. If a cat does happen to bite somebody or scratch somebody that's part of that feral cat colony, the strict quarantine can go in place at that point Otherwise, the AVMA recommends to euthanize that animal instead for rabies testing if it's never been vaccinated before. Outside of that, also getting rid of the microchipping, because that is another cost prohibitive measure. And the fact is they give us a very good list of their animals with descriptions, so they know what their animals look like in their feral cat colony they're taking care of. So the microchip's not necessarily doing anything there. It's just a proof of ownership, basically. It's, you scan a cat and it pops a number.
I can't believe I'm asking this many questions.
About cats.
Oh, I have a lot of questions about cats. Anyway, what does a feral cat colony look like? How is that distinctive from someone who just has a lot of cats?
Well, they're specifically
putting... Are they free-ranging? Is that what it is?
Kind of, yeah, but they're basically feeding them and maintaining them in one area. So a lot of people, when they want to feed cats, you're used to hearing about people putting food out for cats because they're doing so out of the kindness of their heart. They don't really understand they're causing that issue for their problems, because they're probably not spaying and neutering those cats. So they're all gathering in one spot to feed, and then they're all procreating and making more cats, adding to the problem. Cats are getting sick, they're dying, they're causing some kind of a nuisance issue. So people that maintain a colony are more so keeping that specific number of cats in that area. And then that keeps other cats from moving in, and it keeps them from procreating, making more cats. So over time, it solves the problem of the over cat population. So most people call us and they want a cat picked up and gone right now. It doesn't work. A new cat will move in the next day. So this is the only way to kind of fix that. So the more feral cat colonies you have in an area, the more you're actually controlling that population over time.
It's a delicate ecosystem.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think sometimes what you will see will be shelters that have been made, mm-hmm. sometimes out of like styrofoam coolers. People will try to create an environment where the cats can get in from the elements.
Yeah.
What we have found with the existing ordinance is that in your tenure, have we only had one that actually registered?
We now have two.
Okay. Because it's so cost prohibitive, and because if the animal caretaker cannot feasibly capture this cat more than once, like it learned its lesson, then because they can't comply with it, they just don't do it at all, even though they're providing food for the animals. And we really want that if you're providing the food and the oversight for the colony, that you're doing the other things of making sure they get fixed and a rabies vaccine.
So we have two official ones. Do you have an estimate of how many are in the city limit?
Technically one official one. We've just had two in the last 10 years.
No,
I don't have an estimate, but I bet it's a lot that are unregistered.
Okay.
And I think most of those are cats that are not fixed.
Okay.
Because we do take a lot of complaints about people feeding cats, because that falls under this. You have to have that colony caretaker permit in order to feed cats. So.
Okay.
And there are also, I mean, we got some good community input when we were discussing this particular topic. And part of the input was also that there are requirements for feral cats that owned cats don't have. So indoor-outdoor kitties are not required to be fixed. So there's some differences there. So this kind of makes everything a little more consistent and actually healthier for the cat colonies.
How much is the permit?
Free, no charge.
Okay, so just the cost of getting vaccinated one time and say neutering or whatever. Okay, all right.
Oh. A better question, Kevin, might be how many times have we had to go tell somebody to stop feeding the cats?
So many times.
Yeah.
And we run into issues with that even, because you can put food out for your cat, and then the other cats are just stealing that food. Okay, I can't disprove that.
That's it.
All right, are there any questions from council on Chapter 5?
When is this going to come to council.
I guess my question for council is, do you have anything that you are requesting us to take back to the Board of Health?
No, so I think just a clarification about the advisory board or the aggressive animal advisory board. Just on that, because I looked up the county thing and it's like you and Kevin serve on it. And I don't think you guys are allowed to serve on city boards. I mean, especially because you're probably providing testimony at it.
He's not there, but the responding officer would be.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that way.
I think my main question would be, what kind of public input or public education have you done on this, on these changes? I can think of a few people who would be affected by some of the changes and might want to be alerted to it before it comes to council.
Yeah, so public input as we drafted this, you mean?
Public input as you draft it, or even education about what has been drafted and what changes are going to affect animal owners in Columbia.
So,
or caretakers.
Yeah. When the Board of Health walked through these, again, they were very intentional about we're in June, or we did feral cats pretty early. So in April, the board is going to discuss section 5-112, so that individuals that were particularly invested in that would know that, okay, tonight is the night I need to come. And we had that on Be Heard. We had it on our page. We shared that on our social media. We had individuals that either commented on Be Heard, came and gave public testimony, or emailed information that was then shared with the board. So, I think the next point would be, if as this moves forward to a full council meeting, would be we would share these largely through our social. We would use those same platforms, our social media, and Be Heard to make sure that residents are aware that this is coming.
Great, thanks.
Sure.
Would this have a public hearing? And maybe that's a Sheila question.
It'd be public comments. It could be old business. It'd be an ordinance change.
Okay, so people would have a chance to
testify.
Explain to us why you guys are wrong.
Yeah.
I'd like to know that people had a chance before it came to us and we get to that opportunity.
Yeah, they did.
It throws a wrench in our plans.
We had a decent amount of comments. I think most of the comments came about feral cat colonies.
Yeah.
Is that fair, Dr. Rose?
We had some about the tethering in animals, certainly about how strictly to. Certainly, there are sites that would like to have you more strict requirements, but I think sometimes there's a reality that has to be said. You guys may have spoke to at the beginning. I mean, there are a number of changes of this that are just updating. And terminology changes to try to update some things into there. So a lot of it's that as well. But yes, we did have comment periods during our meetings.
Yeah.
Speaking of public education, in addition to prior to, but once whatever changes are made or adopted, do you have some sort of public education plan just for that, because I don't know how many people in Columbia know that you have a limit of four animals, or what constitutes a feral cat colony, and what, like I said, is beyond just, putting food out, but, if you're going to be doing that, then there's some other guidelines that you need to be following, so just informing the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so people are very passionate about their pets, and Kevin and I are no exception. And so if the ordinances change, we would work with staff to have some type of a communication plan so that people are aware of these new changes. Probably one of the best touch points with the city would be when you turn on your utility services. By the way, here are some animal-related things you might want to know when you're new to Columbia. So we've certainly tossed around things like, how do we let people know when they first move here? These are some things that you might want to be, some of the most common things that we find people in Columbia are surprised by. when they move here. Like, there, you need to have your animal on a 4-foot leash. Please pick up its poop. Like, things like that, that Kevin would see most often. We haven't quite figured out how to make that, do that welcome to Columbia. Here's some common things our residents need to know. But it's certainly something we've been toying with.
And I will say that we start with education on everything.
Yeah.
I mean, we go to enforcement after education. So anybody we talk to that we get a complaint about, we're going to educate them on what the ordinances are before we take any action. So we're going to give them time to comply with anything too.
Our shelters are full. It is not our goal to put more animals in our shelters. Kevin and his team work really closely with owners as much as possible to figure out a way through whatever the issue is so they can keep their animals at home with them.
Can you go back over, I forgot what slide it was, but when you talked about the opportunities to quarantine in the home
mm-hmm.
versus having to go to like the Humane Society or a different type of shelter. So right now it does say they have to go, like you have to take it, you have to impound it. I feel like we breezed through that one faster than my brain could go with it because I was thinking about chickens similar.
It's totally dependent on the situation. So there are specifically under 5-3D, those are the criteria they have to meet in order to basically quarantine their dog at home. So right now, has to have a rabies shot, has to have a license at the time the bite occurred. Neither the animal or any animal kept at the owner's residence has a history of running at large. Animal does not have a history of causing injury to a person or an animal. And then they have to do that 10 days. So, and it does have, this is another thing we didn't actually touch on. At the end of that quarantine period, if somebody's allowed to quarantine at home, if it's in the city and it bites somebody outside of their family, they have to set up a exam with their veterinarian on the 10th day to say the dog shows no signs or symptoms of rabies and has finished that quarantine. We have added in there that animal control would have the authority to do that as well as a veterinarian. So we could go to somebody's house like we already do in the county and clear their dog or their cat from the quarantine without them having to make that $65, visit to the vet for an exam fee.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of that is, you know, A, cutting down on how many dogs are at the shelters because we do have a finite amount of space there, and B, saving people a lot of money on costs for that.
Right. What would you say, do you have an estimate in the city percentages that choose to keep it in the home versus have to take it away?
The percentage is much lower without the licensing issue. That's the main, pretty much almost anybody whose dog bites somebody outside the family has had to quarantine their dog because it didn't have a license at one point. That's the one that mainly gets people more than anything. If the dog has a history of running loose or biting somebody, then it's going to be quarantined with us or a vet no matter what. I will say that I don't know if there are any vets in town that do the quarantine anymore. From everything I've heard from the public, there is not. So it's pretty much just on us. I don't know if they ever call you.
I'm not sure.
I'm
a little different because they do, a lot of the vets charge an exorbitant fee to do that, I think. But that's still important. Some may do, I don't know.
Yeah, there's quite a few that.
You know, the question I have with this was that if you're the person who's been, and you're not a member of that family, do you feel comfortable allowing the person to have the animal home? And there's really no option in here for the person that's bitten choose where the animal's kept. And the liability is with the owner, and animal control now in the city, because they're saying.
Well, that's part of the reason I asked the question I asked. And people are passionate about their pets and often irrational about their pets. And so when a pet, if a dog bites a neighbor, it would be not uncommon, I think, for someone to rationalize that in any number of ways, and then maybe not be so careful about the kind of impoundment they're doing at home. So that's what I mean. And on top of that, I just want to say thank you for the work that you do.
Oh, thank you.
And that's one of the reasons, because people are very passionate about not only pets, but animals generally. And so these are important considerations for that reason alone. And so I appreciate how you do your work. And how long have you been doing it? 10 years?
It's actually 12.
12 years?
Yeah.
Good for you.
All right, so my understanding, our next steps is that an updated ordinance will come back to a normal, regular city council meeting. I think what we're hearing is that it should be expected to be on old business, not consent agenda, so that people have another opportunity to speak. And then I think I also heard from just, I think including in the council memo, what public outreach did happen, and then also the plan for education and outreach after it passes would be appreciated. Anything else on chapter 5? Oh, Betsy, are you going to admit guilt?
No.
How many cats do you have?
No complaints. I have my sister's cat, so that's why I have too many. But my next door neighbor has too many also, but she has rabbits. So my question, just out of curiosity, she's like, oh, am I in trouble for the rabbits? I'm like, I don't think so. They're house rabbits. You guys have nothing to do with house rabbits, right?
There is an ordinance in there about rabbits. It's four weaned rabbits, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. I think she's got two or three rabbits and a couple dogs. And they all get along. Don't ask me.
Betsy, this is on.
This is what? No one's complained.
Or anything else for chapter 5? Yeah,
any, any stipulations for gerbils asking for a
nope, nothing about gerbils.
Okay. I think we should quit.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on chapter 5 for this? Well, thank you all for doing this and going through the process. I appreciate, especially Board of Health, thank you, Tom, and the other members that are here. I think especially because, you know, we hear like one part of an ordinance. And I appreciate the board going through like the whole section and finding the additional updates that you needed that were out of date or just needed to be improved. So I let that be the other departments. So in case that comes up, I think it's appreciated. So
the board was very thoughtful and diligent, and it pretty much dominated all of 2025 and their meetings. Right. So they put a lot of work into it.
Well, appreciate it. They were feeling left out, you know, the pandemic was over. Like, yeah. We talked about dogs and cats. All right, well, thank you. Is there anything else for the good of the cause that council wants to bring up?
Is there anything related to the agenda or anything else?
Any questions on for the agenda this evening that weren't answered beforehand? I think we have, there's three things that are pulled from consent, just as a heads up for us. One is a bill that's a replat, and the other two are the resolutions, which just need some supplemental memos or wording updated to them. That's all. Anything else, Sheila, that you can think of? All right, well, then you all have like an hour to eat second dinner. All right, so go ahead and adjourn our meeting at 5:58.